The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
Not living in a real world, a fallacy world, I said just cut his throat. And before I knew it, a friend of mine pulled out a knife and cut his throat.
Coming up, John Skipworth chose a life of trouble that eventually sent him to prison, but God set him free.
God, forgive me for being a murderer. God, forgive me for being a liar. God, forgive me for being a drug addict. And I just felt like moments, and I was just crying out to God, forgive me for all the disappointment, for all the hurt. I'm just broken before you today.
Today, I'm Betty, and this is James.
And it is a joy. It's a privilege. This is an incredible story. We don't have any dull stories on life today. But this is amazing. This is a guy that he didn't have a father situation that was the best. And I mean, you talk about really getting trapped until you do like the dumbest thing you could imagine, horrific. And then an indescribable, improbable miracle occur. And just have a blessing that only, you know, like a miracle that only a God could do. And that's the story with really with John and Brooke Skipworth. And they're from over in Louisiana and go to part of a church staff there in West Monroe. And I want you to welcome John and Brooke. Would you? Welcome right there. Glad to see you. All right, John, I want us to cover some ground now. Okay, you and yes. I both had some father issues. And my father had a drinking problem. He was an alcoholic.
Yes,
it repulsed me. It so wrecked the man that I'd only seen a few times and then came into our home and made it hell on earth, tried to kill me and my mother. But what had happened to him through alcohol was so repulsive, I wanted nothing to do with it. A lot of people, though, have alcohol in their family or a big issue there. It just really goes just like the sins of the father right on to the kids. Mm. Somehow, John didn't handle the situation well. So tell us what's going on. Tell us
sure.
the story.
Yes, sir. I am one sibling of five, and I have three stepbrothers who later became my adopted brothers, and I had one half-sister. So growing up in a family with the same father as none of your siblings and the same mother as one of your siblings and not the same last name of any of your siblings could be very confusing for any child, but especially was for me. And James, just to cover some ground and to set up where we're going.
What age were you when you had all this mix?
My mother and father, my biological father, I don't have a memory of them together. At two, I believe, the number they've given me, they were apart. And my stepfather, who later became my adopted father, took parental custody of me. He was in the picture from probably two and a half, three. And honestly, because I lived with him, proximity, and spent more time with him, worked with him, worked on the farm for a tremendous amount of my life, I looked at him more so as my father. And of course, he, at that point in time in his life, had a severe alcohol problem as well, was a severe alcoholic. And for me, I think it set me up to be just the poster child for an identity crisis. But my mother and father, stepfather, eventually split up. Years long overdue. He was an abusive alcoholic, much like your scenario. Violence in the home, physical violence in the home. So eventually, about 16, 17 years old, all my siblings were gone. Stepbrothers were gone. Half-sister was gone. They were all married or in college or with their own families. And I was a sophomore in high school. My parents split up. And I was tired of running, James, just to be honest. Our lives had been so turbulent from Shreveport to Bossier to Louisiana to Arkansas to my grandparents. Just no stability. And I was ready for stability. And somehow I dreamed up an idea that I could just not be bothered by any of it, and I was going to stay. So when my mom left, I said, Mom, I'm staying. And my stepfather at that time said, you know, I would love to have you stay. Maybe as a last hope for my mom to come back, maybe for somebody to be with him. And let me tell you what that turned into. 16 years old, you couldn't beat me on a pool table. probably still can't today because I spent every night of my life in a honky-tonk as a designated driver driving my broken-hearted adopted stepfather from barroom to barroom through one of the darkest hours of his life, which led me into feeling like that was my identity. Okay, this is where I belong. And so I gravitated into the drugs and the alcohol at 16, 17, 18 years old out of really a need in me to figure out where I fit in life. Where do I belong? What is my identity? And so that's how the wrong road got started in my life.
Where did that take you?
Well, that took me to at 17, 18 years old, because we had moved so much and because I knew so many people, no parental supervision. We owned a big farm, a big house, charge accounts for gas, to the liquor store at the other end of our town. And so basically we just had the perfect concoction, if you will, for the perfect storm. And just everybody was coming over to our house on the weekends, all of my high school friends, and it was big bonfires and big parties. And that led to 17, 18 years old, drinking, fighting, and within about 90 days of no parental supervision like that, drugs were introduced to the picture. And within 90 days of that, I was an IV drug addict, sticking needles in my arm, cocaine, methamphetamines, and that led me to a series from 18 to 22 of three felony convictions. The first of which was 18 years old. I was trying to fit in with this group of drug dealers who were buying drugs and bringing drugs from Dallas, Texas to Shreveport and pushing them on the streets. And a hotel room situation one night, drug deal went bad, and I was going to prove who I was and proved I fit and proved I belong, and this was going to be my identity. And a drug deal went bad, and a fist fight broke out, and a young man was several people were hurt, but one man was brutally beaten. And after he was left unconscious, a friend of mine and I took him down the road to get him out of our hotel room, and that led to a robbery situation. My friend and the gentleman at that time came back conscious, and led to my friend cutting this man's throat, and we left him for dead.
And did you have anything to do with that throat cutting? Did you?
I did, James. I was actually the guy waiting in the vehicle, and when my friend never showed up, I went down there and I said, "What's going on?" And I saw they were both conscious, and it was a struggle going on. And I went down there and I struck the young man with a big billy club and knocked him down. And running away, and just a drug stupor and a blur, not living in a real world, a fallacy world, I said, "Just cut his throat." And before I knew it, a friend of mine pulled out his knife and cut his throat.
How old was the guy whose throat was cut, probably?
And he was probably about 23, 24, 25. We left him in a ditch, went back to a hotel room. Everybody began panicking, trying to figure out what to do. A pastor, Easter morning, sunrise service, setting up his chairs, Bossier City, Louisiana, Swan Lake Road, heard a young man gurgling and went down to the ditch. And long story short, ended up calling the paramedics, calling the authorities. The friend saw the authorities, saw the friend in the white bedsheet from the hotel room, and they rushed him to a hospital. His father was a leading surgeon in Shreveport, Louisiana, Dr. Bird, James Bird. Sewed his son's throat back together, saved his son's life by his own admission, just a few centimeters away from slicing his jugular vein.
And probably if the pastor hadn't stopped, he would have died anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
So it's a miracle he lived.
And it was a miracle. And so that led to about a 73-day jail arrest. And I did the worst thing in the world. Well, I cried wolf, said I was innocent, had no part in it. And my parents did the worst thing in the world. They believed me and enabled me and came to my rescue. And 73 days later, I was walking free and feeling like I was invincible. But at that point, and I believe many of the viewer audience would connect with this if they've ever fought an addiction, my drug addiction spiraled out of control. I didn't have the friends anymore, didn't have the drug connections, and I just became a skid row drug addict very, very, very quickly, doing anything that it took. I got picked up for possession, guilty of distribution of cocaine within a matter of 90 days after my family spending lots of money and coming to my rescue. It's my second felony conviction at 19 years old. For over the next couple of years, burned every bridge, told every lie, broke every heart, let everyone down, as you know drugs and alcohol will do. And anyways, what ended up happening at 22 years old, I went on a drug binge, a high-speed police chase, was arrested for a string of robberies with guns, without guns, ski mask, with weapons of people, individual stores. Definitely not proud of any of it. And I was just, trying to feed an addiction that had me in its grasp. And so at 23 years old, I was arrested for the third and final conviction of first-degree robbery after a high-speed police chase and a helicopter, state troopers, Shreveport, Bossier City Police. And that night, I was hiding in the back of a shed, James, and I was tired of running. And I was tired of living the life. And I didn't have the answers, but I turned myself in because I was ready for a change. And I went and turned myself in, and I woke up a few days later, and they took me to an arraignment. And oblivious to my knowledge, in the state of Louisiana, three felony convictions or three strikes and you're out. They call it a multi-bill. They marched me down to a courthouse, presented a piece of paper, and they said, if you won't make the taxpayers spend their money, your own camera, you're guilty, you have two convictions, you're arrested now for five or six more felonies. We'll do you a favor. We won't give you the multi-bill, which constitutes a life sentence in the state of Louisiana. We'll just give you 20 years. You'll serve every day. If you'll sign the paper today, you'll come home in 20 years. And that was the experience that led me to go back to a jail, Caddo Parish Jail, laid down on the floor in a jail cell. No one to impress, no telephone calls to make, no one to reach out to, no lies to tell, no scams to run, no games to play. For the first time in my life, like Jacob in Genesis 32, I had to lay down on the floor and I was all alone. And I had to face the music, lay in the bed that I had made. And now what I would refer to as a purging, a spiritual purging. I laid down on the ground and I just began to cry out to God and tell Him how ashamed I was of what I had done to my family, to my father, to my stepfather, to my mother, to our reputation, to family members that I had hurt. God, forgive me for being a murderer. God, forgive me for being a liar. God, forgive me for being a drug addict. And I just, it just felt like moments, and I was just crying out to God. And I wasn't saying, God, save me and get me out of jail and give me a happy tomorrow. I was just saying, God, would you just forgive me for all the disappointment, for all the hurt? I'm just broken before you today. And I wish I could say I saw angels in the heavens parted. It didn't happen that way. And eventually, over the next two or three months, I had a relentless mom who would never give up on me. She was doing the best with what she had and what she knew to do. We had heard about a program through a church, ironically enough, in Shreveport, Shreveport Community Church, Pastor Denny Duran and Francis and Rodney Duran. Great personal. They're my spiritual mom and dad today and my spiritual grandparents.
Bless you, Denny. Bless you, buddy.
And my mom got me in a program that their church had, a faith-based drug rehab. And somehow a judge signed an order, and I was led into a program. And 5 years to the day, on an Easter Sunday, I walked into Karnak, Texas, to a place called Eagle Creek Recovery Center. And when I walked in, they took me in a room and they said, "Do you know the Bird family?" And I said, "Man, I'm trying to get my life right with God." I thought it was somebody trying to relate to me on a street level. And that was JP's last name, JP Bird. And I said, "I don't want to talk about that. I don't know how long before they're going to send me to prison. I really am trying to be in this program to get the most." And they said, "No, I don't think you understand, John. The Bird family is the reason you're here." And I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Well, when they found out you were trying to get in the program, their son came here 5 years ago and God saved him, filled him with the Holy Spirit. And he's in ministry today. And for 5 years, they've been praying for you and the other two boys that almost killed their son. And God spoke to them and said, you're the seed to see the other two saved." And so they're here at the church tonight and they want to meet you after service.
Wow.
Easter Sunday, 5 years to the day, Shreveport Community Church. The Durons took a chance on me. The Bird family took a chance on me, brought me into their church, brought me into their fellowship. I was there for 7 months. And Frances Duran became my mama and brought me to her house and worked, poured into my life, fed me ice cream at her kitchen counter, prophesied over me, told me who I was in God. Pastor Rodney, her husband, was alive at that time. And I'd walk in the doors and he'd say, "Hey, champion, you man of God." And I would say, "Well, the evangel football team must be behind me because he can't be talking to me." And you know, James, here's the truth. They weren't powerful words because they made me feel good. They were powerful words that no one had ever spoken over me about my identity. Mm-hmm. And it was what God had said about me, that I was the light of the world, the salt of the earth.
It is a miracle story, what you heard. The man's changed, man. And the whole miracle even starts with that boy's life being spared. It's a series of miracles. Mm-hmm. And Brooke, you look like one of those angels he's talking about that didn't come in. You finally showed up. You showed up and you're sitting here listening to the story. What do you think when he tells where he was? And you heard him as working with young people in your church, mm-hmm. I guess in West Monroe, right? Mm-hmm. And it was with Shane Warren's pastor, is that correct? Mm-hmm. So you're just one of the girls there. And
yeah,
you see something in him and you don't see drugs and all that. What'd you see in him?
Well, I mean, I saw that he was a man of God, and that's something, he was genuine, and that's something that I was off at college, and when I came back, of course, you're starting to transition that season of starting to look, and, you know, I never saw...
I started looking before college. I found this over here.
Well, you did good. No, I guess it was just to that point where you start looking for someone who's genuinely a man of God. I mean, you meet Christian boys all the time, but they, you know, then there wasn't much separation between them and the world. And I met him before I even knew his story, and I was like, okay, that's a man of God. And then I hear his story, and I'm like, okay, never mind, God. You know, it's all scary. I remember our first date, we went on a motorcycle ride, and I'm riding in the back of the motorcycle, and
oh,
you
Harley.
See tattoo, yeah, Harley, and there's his shirt's riding up, and there's tattoos in his arm. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? It turned out, I mean, God knew what he wanted for us.
And you can't believe where he was when you see him.
Oh, definitely not. Like, even hearing the story, it just sounds like fiction. Like, every time I hear it, I can't, like, connect the dots to where he was and what he is now, because there's no connection, so.
You hear the greatness of God in his story, don't you?
Exactly.
And you see the greatness and the grace of God.
Oh, I definitely do, yes, sir.
And Betty, it's a story, could be everybody's story that's watching.
Well, it's where, you know, we could all be without the grace of God.
Exactly.
And no matter where we've been or where we are, God can do the same for you or any one
Absolutely.
Of us.
Exactly.
If we'll turn our hearts over to Him and let Him take over our lives and change our lives. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what we've done.
Have you told your story and a testimony? I see a little DVD here I think could get through the church called By a New Name. Is this basically kind of your story?
Yes, sir, it is.
If somebody wanted to get it, say they want to maybe get it to a prisoner or somebody in their family that's struggling,
absolutely.
Would their website they could go to and they could ask, would you send it to them?
Oh, absolutely.
What's the website?
www.theassemblywm.org, which is our church website, The Assembly.
It's too long for most of us to remember. So there it is. It's on the screen. And here's the thing that you know. Anytime you hear something, say, I wish I'd have gotten that, you can always go to lifetoday.org. You can watch the show again. You can get that, or you could call the prayer center and say, give me that website, because I think this might be really helpful to someone who's been through some kind of a huge battle.
Sure.
And I just praise God for your testimony. You're a beautiful couple. Would you
say
thanks to this beautiful couple?
Thank you.
The Skipworths. And I want to say to Shane Warren and Christopher there, my buddy, to all of you there on staff, thank you. And by the way, thank you for your prayers. And you're over there by the Duck Dynasty Bunch.
Oh, yeah.
We love all those. We love their witness and their testimony. And here's the thing I think you'll really appreciate. One of the things that life does, all of you here in the audience know this, we really try to share the life of God, the love
sure.
of God. Our primary focus is on the potentially billion people that we can talk to every day right here on television. And we want to help you. And it's as though you might be the only one watching. And to just know God loves you and wants you to know He is noticing. Here's what I'd like you to see. We have 11 grandchildren. You're going to see in a moment, and you're going to have to really kind of keep watching. You're going to see our oldest grandson and his wife of a year. And a one-year anniversary, 1 year married, you're going to see where they were. And I want you to listen to the heart of God through one of our grandchildren, and I want you to look at what they're talking about and ask God, what do you want me to do? I think you're going to be moved. Watch.
Trey Hoon used to work in his village to provide for his family. But since his wife left him, he now takes this long walk every day to collect water for his three children. Huhakle, Hushaw, and Hukamfake. When our mission team learned of Trey's story, his children literally stole their hearts. Trey shared with the team that his oldest daughter died 1 year ago from drinking the dirty water which made her sick. Trey fears his other children will die because he has no other choice but to get water from the dirty pond. His youngest child, Hukamfake, has become the sickest of his three children, and she is continually lying down to try and get comfortable. All of this has driven Trey to tell us he has no hope.
His little baby is super, super sick, and she's really uncomfortable. I think she's just trying to lay down and get comfortable over there, but just heartbreaking. Like, I think the worst part about the whole story is that he says that he has no hope, like that he's just in survival mode. And that's just really difficult to be in a situation where there isn't any hope or joy or peace or anything.
What's amazing is we have the answer for them, and that is clean water. And we're asking you to please help us be able to bring life-giving water to this family and to other families and villages around here. Please partner with us and help us.
There are not adequate words to describe the gratitude to see our oldest grandson, married a year, standing there with his little bride, looking at those precious children. Betty, I wanted to take every one of them, and I know Luke and Cassie, they did hold those precious children, including that little baby, and love them. And Luke started saying he was going to go to the mission field when he was 4 years old. He told me, I'm going to go, and we're going to feed people, because if we don't, they will die, Papa. And now there he is. That's his anniversary, his first 1 year. That's where it was spent. And for Cassie, they said she won everybody to Christ in Cambodia that had two legs. She was after all of them. And there they are loving him. And what he's saying is, we can do something for that little family. Betty, they don't have to keep drinking that filthy water and seeing the child sick. And for him to say he has no hope, and you and I know that hope is watching right here. Hope rises up in our heart and then is expressed through loving hearts, and we give the hope.
Well, James, I know there's no greater heartache than a parent watching their child suffer and know that every moment they're in pain and they can do nothing. There are some situations where we can't do anything. We can love them and be close to them. But there's this situation where something can be done, and we must do it for the sake of these precious children. So I hope you will feel it in your heart to want to help. Let's make a difference. Let's drill the water well so that these people can have an opportunity to offer something good for their children, clean water that won't hurt them and kill them in some situations.
Well, I guess I feel like that I knew I'd be talking to the answer. I'd be talking to you. But you're a hope's answer. You're the answer for hope. You really are. We together. And I can just already tell you, because Betty and I will do it, and I will tell our grandson, we'll drill a well. Betty and I will drill a well right there. We started years ago, when we started drilling wells, we said, God, every time we come to drill a well, please help us. And when we first started, we couldn't drill a well. But then we got where we could drill a whole well. They were $3,600. And then the price went up because the cost goes up. And now it's $4,800. We'd be able to hold it there. But we'll do that. And Luke and Cassie can hear that. They're going to get a well. But we need to drill 500 wells in situations like that, with precious little children like that and parents like that. And I believe with all my heart, you want to do that. We have some beautiful gifts to send you to say thank you. This is a devotional guide for every day and a journal. Every day a new day. You're going to love this. And it's divided by seasons of the year. And then the Jesus, Names of Jesus pin set, two pins that are just beautiful. And then the incredible painting by Thomas Kincaid, Forest Chapel. We send those gifts to say thanks, but that's not why you give. I don't believe any one of you, I don't believe one of you give to get. I believe you give because it's a blessing to give life. And we're going to share them water for life and tell them about the water of life. And when they see love, they receive it because it's so real to them. Would you right now go to lifetoday.org? Or would you dial the number there on the screen and take your bank card, use it like a check? That's how you should always use it. But I want you to make the largest gift you can. Remember, $48, and this is where most of the money comes for the wells. People who give $48, and others join. And that gives 10 people water the rest of their life. That's how it breaks out. 144, 30 people. Somebody gives 1,200, three people join, we got a well. 2,400, another person joins, we got a well. At any level, see, there is no area too great or too small if we just do what God put on our heart and what we can do. If you can give a well, I know you'll want to. And I believe you will. So would you please reach out and touch someone with love right now? Dial the number. Go online, lifetoday.org, and make that gift. If you write a check, please call the number and tell us you're putting it in the mail. Would you do that? And thank you so much for doing it.
Every day, millions of children are forced to make a dreadful choice. Drink filthy, polluted water filled with deadly disease, or die from thirst. No child should ever be faced with this decision. The good news is there is a solution. Mission Water for Life is one of the most exciting and viable demonstrations of God's love in the world today. Suffering can end because clean water changes everything. With your gift today, we can establish and drill 500 water wells for remote villages in over 12 different nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people. $72 will impact 15 people. And $144 will help provide fresh, clean, disease-free water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, you'll receive the Every Day a New Day devotional. Broken out into the 4 seasons of the year, this daily devotional features scriptures, inspirational thoughts, a Bible reading plan, and a place for you to journal each day. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request the Names of Jesus pen set, one inscribed with the names of Jesus found in Scripture, and the other reflecting the gifts of the Spirit. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well, and request this beautifully framed canvas print of The Forest Chapel by Thomas Kincaid. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online today.
Betty and I are really excited to send you these beautiful, literally seasonal, Every Day a New Day. It's 365 days. And with the devotional guide and the scriptures, you'll have a place to journal your thoughts. It becomes a real time of growing in the presence of the Lord, and you're going to love the insights and inspiration that's shared. I want you to join us with the audience here in saying thanks so much, literally, to our incredible guests, John and Brooke Skipper. What a beautiful couple. Bless y'all. You give our regards to your church of our new
home. Oh, sure will.
All right.
And I'm a bigger hunter than Shane or Chris.
We'll talk. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for sharing.
Be sure to visit stream.org, a rich and lively source for breaking news, analysis, and entertainment. Stream.org. Tomorrow, Ken and Johnny Erickson Tata share how they rely on God's strength while suffering in the snare of ongoing disability and disease. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.